Hello and welcome back to the Motor Racing Passion Podcast. I'm Luke Blattman, again joined by Daniel Blattman, and we're going to give a bit of a recap on this year's Bathurst 12 Hour from a couple of weeks ago. Daniel, it was your 13th trip to the Bathurst 12 Hour. You haven't missed a GT3 event. How would you compare it to this year's one to the other 12 you've been to?
Well, technically I include 2009 12 Hour production race as well, because it went up on the Friday and Saturday. But yes, no, with the GT3s, it was a good event. It, you know, always has something to keep you interested. I will say, though, points I'm sure we'll go into greater detail, was the hype pre-event about the entry list and what turned up, absolutely some good cars and some great drivers, was definitely not what was promised. And the race, we had weather patterns, we had it all, which was great. But the only thing that struck me was normally the rain's, a great equalizer, or, throws up something different. If anything, it just reinforced the dominance of the Porsche on that weekend, which just watching the race back over the last couple of days as well, really, I think, stood out even more than from when we were standing on the hill at the race. But overall, a really good event. I just don't think it'll live in the memory like some of the greats, like the 2019 race, the 2014 race, as two real clear standouts.
It was a dominant win by the Manthei EMA Racing Porsche of Matt Campbell, Lawrence Vanthor, and Ihanken Guven, who was a name pretty new to us, whereas Vanthor, obviously, he's been a veteran of the 12 Hour, and obviously Matt Campbell doing it for Australia. I thought, like you said, the rain, if anything, reinforced the dominance of the Porsche, because even when they had two drive-through penalties in 10 minutes, they still got back to the front relatively easy. And I think I remember on the day when we were talking, I think I gave the race about a 5 out of 10, but I've gone back and thought about it and watched it, and I think you get a different view when you're there compared to when you watch it back. And the race, particularly when the rain happened, it did spice it up a little bit. It arguably removed the Rossi BMW from the fray, because it didn't seem to really handle the wet as well, and it sort of got back up the front when it started drying out towards the end. So I thought a pretty good end to the race, particularly the last 15 minutes, the battle from second to fifth. That was every bit as good as the battle for second in 2015.
Hey, absolutely, yeah. You think that last corner, well, not quite a melee, but between, yeah, Haase, Marcello, and I think was it Booz in the seat at the time as well.
That Jackson was Evans,
yeah.
I think.
Oh, Evans, yeah, which makes sense. It does totally make sense. Yeah, that was excellent. To see him going too wide down the front straight. Felt sorry for Marcello, who got hung out to dry there. But I agree that little dice, and even the dice in the Pro-Am. That saw the ailing 888 Merc get run down as well, was pretty juicy right till the end. So it was good. And even Jules Guyon kept Matt Campbell, even though Matt Campbell was cruising, do you know what I mean, after that last safety car, at least kept some pressure on. But, yeah, the result was never in doubt.
I suppose at least the right car won the race in terms it was fastest all day. They used a bit of strategy to get from something like sixth to first in the first run of pit stops. And then other than the drive-through dramas, just dominated the rest of the event.
Yeah, I think they just, I mean, one thing that showed up was just having car speed. So they just, whenever they needed it, they had it on tap. Lawrence Vanthor even said in the opening stint they had car speed, but, he was just in the train and he just sat back and saved fuel, which gave him those extra couple laps, which then propelled them to the front of the field when Guven took over. So, I think just they had an answer to everything, and, when in doubt, you just have car speed. And it was funny too, like, you think 12 months ago, the Grupperam Mercedes, particularly with Mario Engel behind the wheel, they had car speed. However, their issues and, you know, additional pit stops and things always came at a time that hurt them the most. Whereas you look at this year, and despite the drive-through and the repeated drive-through for the Manti car, it came in amongst a slew of safety cars and then the rain, which allowed them just to pick that off, and they were leading, I think, within one cycle. So pretty dominant display. And I think as both the Vantor brothers were discussing on their show the evening after the race, that I think Porsche definitely played the parity game, balance of performance game, pretty well over the weekend, and it paid dividends.
I think it's a sort of a feel-good victory. Like, no one begrudges Vantor a win. He's been there so many times. Obviously, Matt Campbell and Guven was pretty impressive for someone we're not overly familiar with. So I think hard to argue from a fan's point of view with the winner.
Yeah, I think Vantor, first time he was at the Bathurst 12 Hours 2014. So, and Jamie, he's been electric every year he's been here, particularly in 15, to be fair. So, yeah, he was more than due for one. But the other one I'll throw into that bank as well is Mara Engel and Grupa Rem. I think if we're working our way down the who deserves, you know, a bit of a positive luck in the 2025 race, I think we'd be looking at those two guys.
As long as they run a man filter livery.
That would have been the irony, yeah, if they won without it.
Yeah, if we're talking feel-good victories, they've got to win it with a Manfield delivery. So our weekend started off quite interestingly. Thursday evening, us and the guys we camp with, we embarked on a lap of the track walking, and we came across a BMW photo shoot down at Forest Elbow with all the teams, all the drivers there, Rossi, etc. So naturally, we hung around and had a bit of a look. And while we were standing around, we were just chatting racing while the photo shoot was going, a couple of guys taking pictures. A few of us got a bit of a picture with Rossi. We were approached by a person in 12-hour kit, and they joined our chat. And as we were talking about the 12-hour, they mentioned they were from Supercars and involved in the running of the 12-hour. We won't name them because, obviously, they didn't know we had this little podcast, so... But they were pretty honest and pretty open about who they were and some of their opinions on, or Supercars' opinions, who knows, on racing at Bathurst. But it started out quite a friendly chat, and some of the interesting 12-hour things that came out included the likelihood of Ferrari, Ford and Chevrolet being on board for next year's race. And it sounded particularly like Ferrari will be making a major effort next year in the 12-hour, and presumably the rest of the IGTC too.
Yeah, no, that was very heartening that there was obviously some staff from Multimatic, from the Ford program in Australia. He said one of the visitors from Hype in Ferrari, so let's say positive, not a whole lot on details, but you very much agree that, you know, at least having some boots on the ground, so to speak, is a good indicator of what's possible for the 25 race.
A good sign, I guess, is also the fact that we've got a couple of the latest Ferraris coming for the Australian GT Championship this year, which presumably will then flow on to the 12-hour.
Hopefully. You just hope that and in the release, they did say they're getting engineering and factory support, which you're right, does point to that. And it's a pretty good lineup too with Mostert and Liam Talbot. So, yeah, no, I'm thinking that should be great for the local GT series. It kicks off in about a month's time down at Phillip Island. So, yeah, no, I think that's the big part here too, is seeing some crossover between obviously a strong 12-hour translating into a strong domestic championship, and a strong domestic championship obviously getting representation in the 12-hour, which it's now part of the championship, which is really positive. My only, I guess, critique of that too is it's come through in a number of different things, but I just generally don't think Supercars care about the domestic championship. Which, you know, on one hand, you can say, well, their job's to promote their own category, which is absolutely fine. But I just don't think you can have investment and promote an event and not, you know, not see any value in actually, you know, having a stronger domestic championship that underpins it. So hopefully SRO can flex some muscle on there. But I just find, like, around the whole event, there's no mention of the Australian GT Championship. And, do you know what I mean? It's such a missed opportunity, and it's just quite daft, in my opinion. And people can hide behind commercial considerations, but I don't think anyone's suggesting that that championship's a threat to what Supercars does year-round.
No, there was more Repco Supercars Championship merchandise at the 12-hour than Australian GT Championship merchandise.
Yeah, it's an absolute disgrace. Yeah.
I think Supercars, they tried to buy it in about 2017, wasn't it? The Australian GT Championship, 2018, before CAMS blocked it. And I guess they've just washed their hands of it ever since.
Yeah, it's disappointing. I think it's a great move that CAMS did want some independence between it, but try and run a 12-hour in isolation and just, you know, ignore everything else is quite silly.
We also got talking about night practice from 2022, and we were told, I mean, as expected, it's not likely to come back, especially given the races in February, which is understandable. But they also said that there's no plans to start the race any earlier, as there wasn't any value in the night running, and the whole appeal was the dawn sunrise part of the race. Would you agree or disagree with that?
The night running, jumping, whatever you want to call it, dawn start, night running, is obviously a trademark of the event. So I don't disagree in that sense. One thing I did agree was the comment around just managing officials. So, you can't really have night practice. I agree. Like that, I think having some night running before letting them run loose on a Sunday morning would be a good addition, especially for the people who are first time doing it. But I very much agree with the comment that, trying to manage officials who are, track time running 7 to 5 or 7:30 to 5 each day and then kicking off at 5 a.m. on Sunday morning, if they ran an evening night practice on the Friday night that, in February, it's not getting dark to probably 8, 9 o'clock, to then turn around and go at 7 in the morning, I think there would need to be a bit of a shift. I don't think it's impossible. It's just shifting the schedule of the event, maybe bringing back the Thursday as well and, running late on the Thursday night and then starting later on the Friday or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Just so you are giving a bit of break to the officials and things like that as well. So, yeah, it's an issue. It's just I think there could be some lateral thinking around it as well, rather than just saying we're a dawn start and we're nothing else.
Yeah, I think especially as a lot of the fans of the race, they all seem to want more night running. It's one of the first things people say, can we have more night running? Particularly when the race for a while was running 7 to 7, and which was all daylight. They eventually have pushed the start back because the fans wanted it earlier. So I understand TV-wise, probably, especially there's not much lighting around the top of the mountain, TV probably doesn't want too much night running, but I don't know. I don't think it'd be an unpopular move if they did adjust the times, but then of course you're pushing then the end of the race further away from the news. So
yeah, but I generally don't think the news thing anymore is that big a push. Like Jeremy in the past used to run it into it to try and get that, but I'm like, when you're on 7 mate for part of the day and you're on this for the other part of the day, and obviously KO doesn't have any news, so it's like I think that's less of an issue. I agree. I'd go 5 to 5 and just be done with it. Do you know what I mean? That way you get more dark running in the morning. You also then, people then finish earlier in the afternoon and it's not that kind of mad rush. Save yourself 45 minutes. And so I think that has some value, which doesn't affect marshals and things. But I would like to see some night running over the earlier course of the event in the weekend.
So then we got to the good bit of the chat, slash probably the worst bit of the chat, depending on your viewpoint. So like I said, we're all chatting away and this guy was quite into the chat. And then we were just talking about the 12-hour, how we've all been there for a number of years. And one of the guys in our group just made a casual comment that we also camped at the Bathurst International the last couple of years. And you've never seen a face drop and an attitude shift so quickly, have you? It was like we'd pissed him off.
Yeah, no, it was honestly, it was a disgrace. Like all the perceptions and, chat around the, I guess, single light approach of that organisation and that promoter towards Australian motorsport, this just kind of really provided a solid representation, that their view is that they're the only ones who should be promoting events on Bathurst, which I think is disgraceful. And we were basically told that, despite us saying we had a good weekend at the international last year, we were told that it was no good and we only liked it because no one was there, which I thought was quite a disappointing take from someone who's engaging with fans. So I think it was a bit taken back to how we stood our ground around it as well, because we've spoken on other podcasts around the different events, whether they're Bathurst Internationals, Bathurst 6 Hours, Challenge Bathursts, the 1000 or whatever. So, I thought the viewpoint was quite narrow and, I guess, unfortunately, really representative of the viewpoint of who can run events at Bathurst and, in their opinion, who shouldn't.
Yeah, so this Supercars employee who said he was high up in organising the 12-hour, he fired straight back into a rant, saying how boring the international was, how it shouldn't be allowed to be held because it ruins the reputation of Bathurst, and then says that events like the international make it harder for supercars to put their own events on at Bathurst, which, I mean, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, I was like, then you it was just almost like a party line that had no substance in fact, because the reality has no impact. Like,
And also they don't own the track.
No, exactly.
They don't own the track.
So, obviously the perception was that, that they feel like they have first right over it.
I guess, too, they pitched for that fifth event that the international got with their Picnic in the Park, Goodwood Festival of Speed type event, and got knocked back, which perhaps the organisation, there's still people there who, how dare they choose someone else, not supercars.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and whether that was part of it, whether they just don't like that event, don't know. But yeah, there was that. That was kind of one of the stinging comments around. Yeah, it's like it undermines it reflects negatively on our other events. Which obviously we strongly disagreed with that, and just pushed on again too to what it represented, and the potential in that event as well.
Yeah. And like you said, we stood our ground in the chat, and you mentioned that the feel of the international and the crowd size was just the same as the 12-hour was 10, 12 years ago, to which this person replied that the 12-hour only got any good once supercars had taken it over.
Yeah, sorry, I forgot about that. That probably comment was, revisionist history and just trying to make things up as you go along. But yeah, like that just showed, once again, some pretty startling concerns of the people promoting this event, that their view of the history of it starts in 2016. And I think we pointed out that if that was true, why did VF Supercar pay so much money to buy it off Yeehaw Events? It was a chat riddled with, inconsistencies and a bit of chest beating that wasn't exactly grounded in facts.
Well, yeah, it was reported at the time. Well, rumoured at the time, reported by the likes of Speed Cafe back in 2015 that they paid $4 million for it. So obviously a good whack of money changed hands. And supercars is quite well known for revisionist history. I mean, look at the history of Bathurst, the 1000. And it's quite disrespectful to Yeehaw Events, the previous 12-hour promoters. And the whole conversation around the international and this person's opinion of it, it just shows either it's a personal opinion, but this person's high up in the organisation, so it had flowed down that it's an ingrained attitude in supercars over the last 25 years of arrogance towards other categories in Australian motorsport. And honestly, anytime anyone bags supercars or says they're doing something to harm Australian motorsport, people get called conspiracy theorists. But attitudes like this, it proves it. And, we heard it firsthand, how they feel towards other parts of Australian motorsport. And it's obviously ingrained in the organisation.
Yeah, and I was going to say that. I think that's the part too. It was almost like we were being told we were wrong, which is just such an interesting take for spectators who are at the Bathurst event, and especially when we provided that comparison that, like, we were in the exact same position with the 12 hour in 2011, 2012, 2013, and it grew, and it was, do you know what I mean? It was to start with a slow build, and then it really kicked off in 2013, and just again had another kick up with the Intercontinental branding when that came across with SRO. So it's, yeah, just really, really disappointing. And yeah, the ferocity of, I guess, the dislike for other motorsport was yeah, really hideous.
Yeah. And the conversation ended pretty much there. He found someone else to talk to.
Yeah. Yeah. It ended as quickly as it started. So yeah, no, it was, but anyways, it was good. We're out at get back to the BMW photo shoot and all the BMW drivers and that down at Forest Elbow. So that was something pretty cool, which we'd, I guess we hadn't seen in years gone by.
And we got to walk down Conrad Straight with Pierre Dudonné.
Yes, and I was going to say too, for all the nice throwbacks that we were chatting to him about Texio Sierras, he was quite happy to move on as well too. Didn't want to talk about the past too much.
No, he was more interested in the scenery on the right hand side of Conrad, which is fine, which because he wouldn't come here very much. So
yeah, and good on him too. Well, large portions of the BMW group just all jumped in a car to back. He gladly walked all the way down Conrad.
I guess it should be said too that it's fine if supercars are only looking out for themselves, but just be open about it. Don't pretend you got the interests of Australian motorsport in general at heart. Because like for all these ills, Tony Cochran was always straight up about the fact he was running supercars and that's what he was looking out for, and it wasn't his job to run cams.
No, and agreed. But I think as well in that scenario, in this particular conversation we're having, we're not asking them to. Which, do you know what I mean? Which is, we're kind of the opinion you don't need to run everything else into the group. Like, absolutely prioritize your own category and the things you're responsible for. But I just don't know why you have to kick all the other things and, you know, in the same breath, tell spectators how they're wrong for supporting other motorsport. Just so, absolutely wild. And as I said too, it just reinforced that, you know, that's most likely based off this conversation, an organisation-wide approach.
So off the back of all that, obviously the 12-hour formed a part of the Bathurst Superfest, linked in with the Bathurst Thrifty 500 a week later for supercars. How did the event feel as part of the Superfest? I mean, it just felt like your standard 12-hour. I mean, other than supercars championship merchandise you could buy in the sort of the merchandise alley, or other and the demos, the supercars being part of the demo, it felt pretty much like your normal 12 hour, even down to the fact that most people packed up and left Monday morning.
Yeah, since I say too, I didn't sense too much different. Maybe some branding and as you said, a few references to a 10-day festival, but we were up and out of there as quick as you could on Monday morning to get out there. I guess the only other thing too was some of the Repco activations around the place. But yeah, I was reading something this morning too. It doesn't sound like the Superfest will be coming back in 25. But yeah, you're right. From our point of view, it didn't really have much of an impact on what we did and what we didn't do. So yeah, it's not going to be a big loss to us if it does disappear in 25.
What did you think of the demos? Putting aside the fact that two of the four cars doing the demonstration runs were just doing parity testing for an event
allegedly parity. So there was also a quote that said they were trying to introduce it to a new segment of fans, which, once again, the promoter, they can do what they want, but they've also said in the past that they were two separate events and they weren't trying to, do you know what I mean? They weren't trying to force V8s onto people. I don't mind those types of demos. You know, in years gone past, we've sat through like a bunch of randoms just driving their street cars around, or do you know what I mean? Like Mercedes or Audi just buying an hour's track time and just clients just driving around their road cars. Those are the ones that I dislike. But I found what Mercedes were doing, chasing the lap time, fascinating. And obviously Jules Gounion having an absolute go in that thing. Geez, that sounded good. Yeah. Same for the Ford. I didn't realise until after the fact that the 12-hour part was basically just a warm-up for what they were doing the week later, because that was the thing too. There was no commentary around it at the circuit, I mean, and not exactly knowing what Romain Dumas was doing and the Ford program there as well. It just seemed to do one lap burst and then just disappear for 15 minutes. So that was a bit hard to follow. But yeah, like the Merc and the Ford part of it made that interesting.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. The only thing was, if you're at the top of the mountain, you never knew the Ford was coming.
No, that
it just appear.
Yeah, we were trying to get some video of it, but it was come and gone. And obviously, you know, in a good way, it ended up going fast on the Merc too. So
it was pretty cool, the Ford and the Merc too. But it did make me think that like they should make more of this. I know a few years ago, I remember there was talk of like a supercar, as in road going supercars, you know, chasing a lap record to make it part of the 12 hour. There was one year they had like a LaFerrari here and things like that, and there was talk they were going to do something like that, which has never really taken off. But if obviously the Merc was here and it ended up the Merc set a lap record and then the Ford beat it the next weekend at the Thrifty 500, imagine if you could turn that into a yearly thing where, you know, if the Brabham came back next year to try and reclaim its record and someone else has a dig and you had sort of four or five cars and sort of turn it into a shootout.
Yeah, no, I agree. Well, I was going to say, too, the only problem with the way Ford did it, or whether it's Ford, whether it was the promoter, whatever, but, you know what I mean, would have been good if the Merc and the Ford were trading it all weekend. Do you know what I mean? Like, so one held it and then the next session they went out and tried to take it back. Do you know what I mean? Because the way it worked out, the Merc's had it for a week and then the Ford have taken it. So that would have been cool if, yeah, there would have been multiples trading for it. Now, we didn't even know the Ford was going for the lap record at the time. We just thought it was, yeah, just the cool demos. So, yeah, that was interesting. But that's something I'd like to see it evolve, agree. Just have multiple supercars or, you know, unique cars on there going for it. And but, yeah, get them doing it all at the same time.
You mentioned earlier about how Porsche had played the BOP game in the race. I mean, that's just a part of GT3 racing, isn't it? It's always happened. There were many years the Audi was practically uncompetitive at Bathurst with the BOP it had compared to other tracks. And I mean, sandbagging and playing the game, have we just got to accept that's just part of the...
It does. And John, I mean, you go to 2016, McLaren had a favorable one. The only thing I'll say, though, is this is the first year it felt like one car had a clear leg up. Like, it just had that speed throughout the whole weekend. Manti ended up, despite being in the sand as well, winning the Pro-Am one as well. Whereas in years gone by, there was probably a couple of cars that were in the shout, even though there was, you know, some cars affected by BOP. Audi, the great example, 2015, 2016, 2017 as well. So, yeah, I think that's just one thing that stood out too. Like the BMW was struggling. The Merc with their lap limit, their 32 lap limit, obviously caused them issues. And then the Audi all having all Pro-Am lineups as well. So I think that was the one. Whereas the Audi BOP was probably fine. It just didn't quite have the cattle all day long like some of the other vehicles on the list as well. So I think that's probably where it showed up the most. Absolutely, like BOP is part of the game and everyone's jostling. But yeah, the BMWs and Mercs in particular just felt a little bit hamstrung all day long.
They've got to get rid of this like lap count as part of performance balancing. It takes all the, I mean, as a lot of the drivers said too, it takes racing out of the racing. It's do it all technically. Don't play around with the racing on track to equalize the performance. Play around with the cars before they're on the track.
And exactly. And then don't, do you know what I mean? Don't have lap limits for one car and not others, because as we said, Porsche just sat in a train and saved fuel. But then it comes hard to manage throughout the race as well. Like I forget it. I think it was in that opening stint, or the second stint, they'll give in lap extensions. They'll give in one lap or two laps. And, you know what I mean, that's just something that a variable that you're adding on the run as well. So, yeah, it's not endurance racing lap limits, and there's just so many other ways to do it. I get that Bathurst and other tracks are unique, but these little BOP changes on Saturday morning and things like that are fairly frustrating as well. I know it has happened at Le Mans and different things like that, Spa that has come, but yeah, it just feels a bit, you know, sticking your thumb in the air and seeing which way the wind's going.
I mean, if you want to see the stupidity of maximum numbers of laps between fuel stops, just look back at the kart Champ Car World Series from 2002, and in particular the Surfers Paradise round.
Exactly.
That shows the stupidity of where it can go wrong.
But at least that was a 2-hour race or a limited, like a flat out thing, whereas this is a 12-hour endurance race. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's something that I think can be left in the past moving forward.
Speaking of left in the past, do you think the shootout format we've had the last couple of years should be left behind?
Yeah, I think the conversations we had were pretty unanimous that it just didn't really seem to get going. That session, that top 50%, bottom 50% in qualifying, or the practice that led into the qualifying, I thought that was okay. That was a nice little evolution. But yeah, I just think there needs to be a bit of an evolution with the qualifying, because it just felt like it didn't go anywhere. But they've toyed with it so much as well. You know, we used to have the 20-minute Class A all in for many years. Then that got replaced in 2016 by a shootout because we were told, or sorry, 2017, because we were told that a Bathurst event needed a shootout. And then we got told that a Bathurst event needed its own identity for qualifying. So it just feels like they don't really know what they want yet. And it's, do you know what I mean? It's just kind of going back and forward. So I think there's still some work to do there. But yeah, I don't think any of us really were that enthralled by the shootout.
No. I think, look, if they don't feel or they don't want to risk it with the cold tyres, which a part of me is just like, they're professional drivers, they know the risks for the following day, just do it. Like if it was raining, you'd have just as little grip and they'd still run a shootout. So you either do that or put all the cars in one session, give them 15 minutes. You can warm your tyres up, but you only get one lap. And you have to call it when you think your tyres are up. You know, the radio communication's so good these days, a bit like Indianapolis, back when they had the original qualifying format where you could wave off a run or you had to say, yep, I'm going for it. So just give them one lap, but they've got 15 minutes and as many warm-up laps as they feel they need. And then, say, halfway down Conrod, you can give the call that my hot lap's next lap.
Yeah, or the other option is just give them just two warm-up laps.
Well, yeah. That's.
I know for TV and things, that might not be one, but also I still don't think that the product necessarily at the moment was that's spinning at whatever, another half hour or something. I think that kind of works. And like as well, we're talking about two warm-up laps, race start as well, because that's probably like, you know, and whilst qualifying, as we said, we weren't thrilled about, I thought the race start was probably a bigger black mark on the event this year.
Oh, definitely. I think the first start, no matter how many laps you did behind the safety car, the first start should be a proper start, side by side.
It's just funny too. They talk about how, you know, the brand and, you know, what the event's known for. And it's like at the moment it's known for single file safety car starts to start a 12-hour endurance race, which is just, you know, is almost the standard, which, you know, is not what we're accustomed to. And I shudder to think that anyone thinks that's it's a great way to start a race. It's almost like the, the Indy 500, there was a train of thought for those kind of years in the late 2000s, where it was like, if you weren't pole, you deserved to lead at the first corner. So they let you bolt and just kind of run single file in the front straight. No one wants that with a Bathurst 12-hour start.
And by the same token, another sort of tradition that's developing with the 12-hour is the quote that, oh, it'll be better next year.
Yeah, just wait till next year.
Obviously 2022, we were told, obviously we got to get through it and it'll be back to business in 2023. Then 2023, we were like, oh, you know, it's the first full year out of COVID. It'll be bigger and better again, and be back to normal in 24. And then 2024 rolls around and we get told, oh, there's so many more manufacturers will be back next year. It'll be back to 2020 spec next year. So we can only hope that it actually is.
Yeah, it's just this running thing that it's just the excuse, you know, of, oh, but yeah, this happened this year, just wait till next year. And then next year there's another, well, this happened. So it's kind of like, it's fine. Just I think if we just dealt with what came each year, no, I'd be disappointed, because you just take as it comes. But there's all this kind of overhyping for what purpose, we don't actually know yet. And then you get the defensiveness around it as well, which is even worse.
Off the back of particularly the Shell BMW crash with the Ginetta and also the yellows caused by the Vortex, there were calls, again, for it to be a GT3-only race. Particularly, there was guys like John DeGeese on Twitter. He was posting every 5 seconds that they should get rid of the invitational class and things like that. But, I mean, I think in terms of the race, the problem was the Vortex causing all the yellows. The problem wasn't the invitational class.
Yeah, exactly. There was contact, but you're always going to get that around that place. Sorry, between other invitational cars, but you're always going to get that. And you know what I mean? Endurance racing is class racing. And I think from all the incidents we saw that were car to car, it was, the pro GT3 cars that were the cause of those incidents. So, yeah, I touched an issue. And apart from the Vortex beaching itself on the ripple strip, which wasn't ideal, others, they were just accidents, Like the Ginetta, credit to it just kept on going all day, but they didn't really do anything wrong. And the mechanical here and there, and obviously with Charles Wirtz there in the BMW, but yeah, no, it's I don't understand where particularly John DeGeese was coming from, because I actually highly rate his analysis. But yeah, he was quite aggressive on it, which I thought was a touch unnecessary.
I think there's an overseas perspective or a European perspective that they think, obviously, because it's around the IGTC and I guess because there's SRO involvement, they think it's a GT3 race and wonder why there's non-GT3 cars in it. Whereas they don't understand from an Australian perspective, it's not a GT3 race. It's a race with GT3 cars in it.
Yeah, exactly.
Over the years of the 12-hour, it's come up a few times where people saying it should be GT3 only, but the facts are that the fans, Australian fans, like the variety of the invitation class cars and, mixed class racing, and also the fact the race cannot support GT3 only. The race wouldn't survive.
You're 100% right, and I think we even saw that in this year's entry. Imagine if it was GT3 only this year, we'd add 19 cars.
Yeah.
You had less than 2022. You had less than 2023. So we actually had negative progression or regression for this year's event. So that's why every time people say that, I was like, just open your eyes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Maybe you could have argued it in 2020 that it was getting to the point where, maybe you could have GT3s only. If there was an issue with class cars, at least in 2020, you had enough GT3 cars to have what's nowadays considered a full field. But until that point and ever since, if you think 19 cars are enough for a 12-hour, well, you're not going to see many more 12-hours.
And as well, like even year 2020, yeah, like I have to check, but we must have had 30 GT3 cars.
Yeah, it was around 28 or 29 or something.
Yeah, which is good. But I love the category, but I don't want to watch 20. Oh, I don't want to watch just GT3 cars going around. I want to see a Daytona Coupe and Joe, and I want to see a Mark variation, and I want to see different things like the Vortex. Think of the Peugeots. Obviously, we may have gone past the Fiats that we had in 2014, but they're some of the happiest memories, seeing the 458 Ferrari going around the outside of a Fiat Arba. So I think that's iconic for the event. I think it's unique and it is a selling point. So I think, let's continue to grow GT4. Let's continue to grow invitationals with unique cars. The KTM's another one that fits into the international class, but it's as GT aligned as they come.
Roland Dane wrote a post 12-hour column for Speed Cafe, and he raised a few points, which you mentioned in our previous episode, about how you agreed with about three quarters of the article, but the sort of the last quarter completely lost you.
Yeah, I was flying with him. And then I was like, when he said that, V8s should go it alone, and just doubling back to an earlier comment, I don't understand how that has any substance when they have no skin in the game with the actual category. So, yeah, he really was drinking the Kool-Aid there in that sense, and absolutely agree with some of his concerns around those regulations. But let's fix those. But it needs to be an SRL aligned event, and let's hope it continues.
Well, the thing is, like you said, the first sort of three quarters of it had to do with BOP and a bit of full course yellow and safety car sort of regulations, which, like you said, all of his comments there had merit. But the thing is, if supercars go it alone without any SRO involvement, you then obviously it would not then be an Intercontinental GT challenge round. It most likely, unless you get a Nürburgring 24-hour situation, but I feel like that's a bit of a stopgap at the moment to fill the calendar. But you'd then have to rely on the 12-hour being a big enough pull on its own, not without being aligned to the IGTC, for the likes of BMW to send WRT and Rossi and that, and for other teams to come over. It may not be a big enough pull. It might be that it's because it's a round of the IGTC, that's what gets the internationals to press the final commit button.
Yeah, exactly. You need that. You need those relationships with the manufacturers that SRO has. Obviously, the balance of performance as well that it runs off. So yeah, it's. I think if we just the less oxygen we give that from Roland, I think the better, because yeah, right, it just doesn't work. And there's no expertise in that category to run it without, especially even more so now with SRO being having an office and a role in running the Australian series as well.
We loved the 12-hour in 2013, 2014, when it wasn't aligned to an international championship. But I think the point is that it'd go back to those sort of fields in terms of GT3 machinery. Like, you'd get a few Europeans come out, but the backbone would have to be local GT3 cars for that sort of scenario. Yeah. Whereas at the moment, with it aligned to the IGTC, you can rely on international cars to come out, which we've mentioned before, we think is a bit dangerous, because then you're relying on the health of the IGTC. But for the short-term future of the event, I think that's, if you want to keep up the current level of involvement and professionalism, you have to stay aligned with SRO.
Yeah, definitely. And generally, they've just got great momentum. I think having it part of this event is very important. So we'll just continue on as it is, and fix those little things that Roland quite rightly pointed out. But let's just do so in a progressive way rather than trying to go all in crazy to enact change.
All right, so we'll finish off with a little bit of fun. Can I get off you one little change you'd make to the event, which, you know, something that, you know, is quite feasible and quite you could see happening, and one massive change that if you're in charge, you could just blow something up and do something with the event and make a huge change, which doesn't have to be realistic, just something you'd like to see.
Yeah, so a little change would be that weaving rule behind the safety car. That's just so tedious and only unique to Australia, but no one's ever actually been able to justify why it's an issue when the lights go out. And obviously we see people getting caught out year on year, and it's like, do you know what I mean? It's so tedious. I don't understand. It's, at least from what's been shared, we can't see it linked to any kind of safety issue. So I think legend bin that. And then for the large change, I'd still love to see the event start on Thursday.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be an all-day Thursday, but, you know, run some supports and, yeah, maybe get a bit of an evening session Thursday night or something. And, yeah, I think just because it's so compressed that Saturday. And one thing we didn't talk about yet, earlier in the one, was just two support categories felt thin. So if that's a definitely way to get more of them spread out over the weekend, more people spending money in Bathurst, it's got to be a good thing. And yeah, in February, so the residents shouldn't be too impacted. So yeah, that would be my kind of change for the event.
It's funny you say that, because my little change involved the support classes, and I agree. two support classes were not enough this year. Having said that, combined sedans, it's become a bit of a staple of the 12-hour, and I think that should definitely continue. And I think Group S is a great fit.
Yeah,
for the 12-hour as well. It fits in with sports cars, it fits in with the GT style racing, and I think they're really, they suit the event to a T. The only thing missing this year from Group S was their little Spirit of Racing stall.
Yeah.
With all the with all the golf merchandise and everything. But one thing I'd love to add to that is bring back improved production as a third support act. Because I know some of the improved production cars do go in with combined sedans, so you'd be stealing a couple of entries from that. But the front end of combined sedans is all sports sedans or older VO2 supercars, things like that. So improved production, they always had a full grid. You used to see some real gems show up in that. Like I remember there was a Ford Mondeo one year. There was a little 190 Mercedes one year. Some really cool little cars would show up. And they were a bit of a staple of the event sort of before combined sedans. So I'd love to see them come back.
Agreed. Yeah, and as well, I'd say too, and this is probably jumping, but I was like, yeah, that or Formula Fords. Because the time they've been there, they've been really good as well.
Definitely. If you were going to steal too many cars from combined sedans, or, you know, it wouldn't be worth having them separate, like combined sedans and NIP, then my next one up would be Formula Ford. Definitely. They've always been really good on the bill. And my major change, now go with me on this. Don't laugh at it straight off the bat.
Good start.
I would, given earlier on we were talking about more night running, I would change the race to a Bathurst 18-hour.
Yeah, fascinating.
Now, hear me out. So it'd be a quirky distance. You could start it at midnight or just before midnight. So you get 6 hours of night running leading into 12 hours of daylight running. You still get your nearest as you can get to 6 o'clock finish. It'd be a quirky distance. Imagine the build-up on the Saturday night to the race. You could have some twilight support races, a big carnival, get the cars on the grid an hour or two early, just like Le Mans. Fireworks going off. Obviously, you'd need a few more floodlights around the track, but you could have a big carnival leading into the start. You could have a Ferris wheel.
That's my
pitch.
I can't say that it enters my mind. I don't mind it. I like the event aspect of it. I think the only concern would be what does an extra 6 hours of running do for entries? Do you know what I mean? Yep. But that's definitely something that can be explored. If the cost of the cars are getting them here, what's an extra 6 hours of fuel, tires, and you know, that's it'll give it a unique branding as well. I'm not too sure if there's any 18-hour events in the rest of the GT endurance world. So I think it's good thinking out of the box.
And if they don't want to have the expense of an extra 6 hours, I'll go back to Will Hagen's proposal that he aired on air during the 1991 inaugural Bathurst 12-hour, where he said the race should run midnight to midday, so 12 a.m. to 12 p.m. and that's where I got the idea for the carnival start.
And from memory, Sepang or something, Sepang 12-hour did that. They used to alternate, didn't they, year on year?
Yeah, the Madurka Millennium race, yeah.
Yeah, midnight start, midday finish, and vice versa. So,
I think, and obviously it's a long time ago now, but anyone who attended the Bathurst 24-hour knows how magical it was watching so many hours of racing at night. And the closest we've had to it since is obviously the opening hour or so of the 12-hour each year, and or the opening 2-odd hours of the 2022 race. But you could move around, see different parts of the track in the dark, and that's whereas nowadays you sort of pick your spot, watch the start, and before you know it, it's light.
Correct. So
I get the TV aspect, but you know, Le Mans, Daytona, Sebring, they still have hours of night running. So, and those events seem to be going well enough. So that's just my oddball idea.
No, I like it. Even the start time, like, so sorry, not going completely down your one, but in 2022, the race started at 5:15 or something.
Yes.
Yep. So I was like, I don't understand why we can't do that in 2025. You know what I mean? That's another way to get more dark running. And obviously it's manageable with all the volunteers and things like that because we've done it before. So it's at minimum think that's achievable. And I think 18 hours as an event too, quite unique.
So that's about where we'll wrap it up. They're just our thoughts on the event. It's as I said, you've been to 13 of the GT 12 hours. Mm-hmm. I've been to 11 of the 12 hours. I only missed 2011 and 2016. you know, there one guy's in our camp said during the race, he said, we seem to complain a lot about the race, but it's an event we love going to each year. Our partners say they hear about the 12 hour for 12 months straight because that's what we talk about. And if we're critical, it's only because we care about the race and we've been going for so long that, you know, we just care about what happens with it and what's happening with it. And that's why we'll be back next year. No questions asked.
Yeah, I was going to say too, that's exactly it. It's because we have seen it evolve and we have seen the different things change along the way. So, I think it's, comes from a place of trying to be constructive.
Yeah. And just because you love something doesn't mean you can't complain about it or think it can be better. Adage of if you don't like it, don't watch, that doesn't apply when you're passionate about something.
Yeah. No, that's...
Especially motor racing. And the more people passionate about motor racing, the better.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which is why that's the name of the podcast.
Very good plug.
I did that without thinking as well. Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Daniel. Thanks for joining us again.
Pleasure. I'll see you guys next time.
We'll be back soon with another podcast of Motor Racing Passion. Keep watching online. Go to our Facebook page, our Instagram page. And we're also on X. And we'll look forward to seeing you on the next one. Bye for now.